This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
It's coming up to 8:48 on this October 8th. Han and Joy is keeping you company on this morning run on BFM 89.9. Thank you so much to Ashraf, who WhatsApped in earlier this morning saying that he listens to BFM on the MRT every morning on the way to work. Well, you can always stream us via the BFM app, available on the Google Play or the Apple App Store, I'm going to assume that most of you are in your cars right now listening to us via the FM radio waves, but still, no matter how you access us, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. Speaking about MRTs, though, we got news on this MRT2. So looks like the job for the underground portion of the MRT2 that is up for grabs again. So the government couldn't reach an agreement with MMC Gamuda with regards to the underground portion, and this is in keeping with the idea of trying to reduce the overall cost of the MRT2. Couldn't reach an agreement for the underground portion, so they have decided to cancel the contract and reopen it for international open tender.
Yeah, so this unfinished works will be re-tendered out, and the original cost for underground works was 16.71 billion ringgit. But what they could come to agreements with, I think, was looking at the above ground portion. So the government has accepted an offer from MMC Gamuda to complete the above ground portion of the MRT2 for 17.42 billion ringgit. Compared to the original cost of over 22 billion ringgit, there's some cost savings of some 23%.
Yeah, so again, they're saving money on the above ground portion without having to reduce the number of above ground trains. Underground, that's up for grabs again. What's also interesting to note, that with the above ground portion, looks like MMC Gamuda is going to be the turnkey contractor now, because previously when they got the job for the whole MRT2 line, they were the PDPs, the project delivery partners. So now they're going to be doing it as turnkey contractors. Now, this is significant because of the burden of the financing risk.
Yeah, so the turnkey contractor takes the construction risk, and the returns are based on how well the project cost is managed. And that's not confined to just 6%. Because if you compare that to a PDP model, you know, at that time, when the PDP model was awarded back in February 2014, MMC Gamuda had to ensure that the project was completed on time within a cost determined by the project owner, that's MRT Corp. Mm. And in return, the PDP earns a fee of 6% of the total project's cost.
Right.
And, you know, reimbursed for some expenses incurred. I guess for a turnkey model, the accountability and responsibility is with the the contractor.
Yeah, and look, that's also consistent with what the government has been saying, right? Oh, we have to struggle with that 1.087, I think that's the number, or at least less than 1.1 trillion ringgit debt. So, you know, trying to hand off that financing risk to other entities, I think, is in keeping with that agenda as well. So, you know, now you've got, as we said, MMC Gamuda now being the turnkey contractors there. But recall that these guys, MMC Gamuda, they successfully delivered MRT1 on time and also below budget, or below that 30 billion ringgit budget. I think the final construction cost was in the low 20s, I believe, right? So they have done that, but looks like maybe that's not good enough for MRT2.
I think they can't come into agreement with the cost when it comes to MRT2, right? When it comes to below underground.
Still, the cost savings of about 23%, that's pretty much in line with the expectations by Affin Hwang Capital Research. Now, do note that the announcement by the MOF came out yesterday, where else in a report that Affin Hwang Capital Research did towards the end of last week, 4th or 5th thereabouts, they predicted that the MRT2 project could see up to 25% cost reduction. So now we have got the official figure, 23% cost saving there. Again, that's for the above ground portion, though. We still don't know what's going to happen with the underground side of things.
Yeah, so who's going to be bidding for the underground works? I mean, if we look at all news reports, this was back in 2016. The shortlisted companies were China Railway Group, China Communications Construction. We also have Taisei Corp from Japan, as well as Hyundai Engineering and Construction from Korea. Whether or not these names will be on the list in the new Malaysia, We'll have to wait to see.
Anybody want to bet the Chinese guys can get dibs on this?
They could. Who knows, right?
I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see, you know, or whether ECRL could have left a bitter taste in their mouth. But the idea is, like, you need these bigger guys to take on the financing risk. You know, again, if they're going to go with that turnkey contractor model as opposed to PDP. And that was one of the arguments made, you know, when this project was first awarded out as well, because some of these smaller guys, they don't have the kind of clout. They don't have the kind of clout to actually take on that much financing risk. That's why they have to form consortiums and whatnot. Mm. So now it's just the underground portion. Yeah, again, we'll have to wait and see. Speaking about waiting and seeing, so initially, MRT2 was slated to be completed by about July or mid-2022. So now with this reopening of the tender, you know, that timeline or that deadline rather could be pushed back further as well.
Well, a number of major transportation projects have been pushed back or shelved recently. I mean, we have MRT3, Transport Minister Anthony Lok saying that the implementation of MRT3 is postponed. That's not scrapped. Also, if you look at the ECRL, that's part of China's Belt and Road Initiative, estimated cost of 55 billion ringgit. Now, at first there was speculation that it's totally cancelled, but now they're saying that it's not cancelled, it's just been put on hold. And we also have the high-speed rail.
Yep, high-speed rail delayed to 2020 there, so we'll have to wait and see. Yeah, so a lot of waiting and seeing though, but hopefully once these rail lines actually come online, there'll be a lot less waiting and seeing. So yeah, okay, moving on to another story here in today's Star Biz. This is a pretty fascinating one. According to their sources, the Star, that is, Khazanah could see some foreign appointments to its board of directors. Now, we have seen that turnover, or some might even call it the clear out, at the top at Khazanah, Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar, of course, and the entire board resigning. We have seen then others taking their place, but there could be more, and perhaps from beyond Malaysia.
Yes, the sources quoted by Starbiz says that, you know, one of these appointments could be that of Chinese national who is founder of one of China's largest AI firms backed by Alibaba. So Sihan, maybe the relationship with China is not that bad. You're working on it.
Yeah, well, maybe, you know what? That's a distinction to be made between Chinese government-linked entities versus individuals from the private sector. Yeah, Chinese national from private sector, in this case, possibly SenseTime. That's what we're gathering as one of the largest AI firms in China that's backed by Alibaba. So if this materializes, yeah, you know, there could be a more foreign mix to the board, not just from China, but possibly, according to this story, also from the US and Japan. Which then begs the question, right? You know, for these foreign appointments, are they best suited for the Khazanah mandate? Again, they are a sovereign wealth fund connected to the Malaysian government. Do they have Malaysia's best interests at heart?
Also, the question of, do we not have enough local talent to put on the board? Because, well, of course, we saw the old board members leaving, and among them were Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar, we have Dato' Sri Nazir Razak, Tan Sri Raja Arshad Raja Uda. These are good corporate people with good experiences, you know, behind their CVs.
And they have been replaced since Tun Dr. Mahathir then helming the board. Of course, the Economic Affairs Minister, Dato' Sri Muhammad Azmin Ali, former Petronas President and CEO Tan Sri Hassan, former Bank Negara Deputy Governor Sukhdev Singh, how can we forget?
Yeah.
Also, former SC Executive Director Goh Ching Yin. So perhaps added to the mix, if this story is true, if the sources to the Star are correct, then yeah, we could see some foreigners added to that board as well. Personally, I don't mind it, you know, as it's all for meritocracy here. If they can deliver, right, I'm all for it. Because if you look at, say, Mark Carney, he's the head of the Bank of England, but he's Canadian and he's doing the job well. And so if we can replicate that and find talented and highly qualified individuals who can lead Khazanah well, I'm all for it. Doesn't have to be Malaysian.
Yeah, but is it really based on merit? Because, I mean, the past board members, a lot of them were good members as well. They did hit their KPIs and all that. But, you know, then again, new Malaysia, new rules.
Yeah, I guess. You know, but I think just as important as the individuals who are going to fill those board seats, it's also the mandate. Because a few weeks ago, it was mentioned in the press that Khazanah is ready to have those talks about this possible shift in the investment strategy. When we were talking about this earlier this morning as well, we had a comment that came in from Regu, who says that, "I guess the appointment of foreigners to Khazanah's board is not only about talent, but also about reach and influence. So according to Regu, these appointees could open up Khazanah's investment portfolio to areas not previously traded upon." So recall at the end of last week, there was talk about a unit under Khazanah that could be investing in the third national car. So yeah, you know, we'll kind of see what this new mandate is, what their new portfolio makeup will look like.
Actually, looking about the new investment mandate, I think we would know that by year end. So that's soon, actually. Speaking about changes, The Itch has this story over the weekend about Co-op. They're poised for a change at the helm. And we have Datuk Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, the CEO of Kumpulan Wang Persaraan, that's Co-op. He is expected to be the next Glick head to be replaced.
Yeah, and he's normally quite active on Facebook. So I sent him a message over the weekend, nothing. So I guess he's kind of keeping things quiet there.
Not you.
Yeah, I know. Story of my life, right? Women, GLC leaders, same thing. Okay, it's terrible. But look, so again, right, whoever's going to step into that role, the CEO of Co-op, is going to have this huge, huge task ahead of him or her, because the pension bill for Malaysia's civil servants, you know, that is just growing and growing. And that was something that we addressed with Dato' Wan on The Breakfast Grill when he was on, I think late last year,
Yeah, you can listen to that interview when you download the BFM app. Also, looking at this Edge story, they're saying that, you know, government sources say Wan Kamaruzaman was notified of his imminent departure by the Ministry of Finance last week, although the effective date is still being discussed, and it's not known who will replace him.
Yeah. If you look at the, again, going back to the pension bill for civil servants, right, it apparently, according to Saudara YB Lim Guan Eng, costs some 8 billion ringgit a month, and that's just for emolument and pension benefit payments. And that figure, is it 8 or 80? I'm not quite sure. I got to double check on that now. But apparently, that figure could go up to, could rise by the by next year. And if you look at the overall bill, I think this is what we discussed on The Breakfast Grill. It was in the hundreds of billions. And guess what?
That's a lot.
Yeah, Co-op cannot keep up. So they are not even paying out the dividends right now. So we taxpayers, we are actually paying for the emolument and pension benefits. Co-op just has that money, and whatever interest or income that they get, they just keep reinvesting, reinvesting, reinvesting. The idea is to grow it, right? So can this new CEO, that's if Dato' Wan does step down, can this new CEO really help Co-op fulfill its mandate? Plenty of waiting, plenty of seeing. Don't have to wait too long for the 9 a.m. news bulletin, and after that, we'll take a look at the local boards. So stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.